Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Service dogs are essential in the day-to-day life of many people. Individuals who are blind or have low vision, those who have difficulty hearing or remembering to take medication. Service dogs can even alert people before they have a seizure or if their blood sugar is getting too low. Not only are the dogs trained to perform tasks for their handlers, they create opportunity for independence and provide companionship. Today, we talk about service dogs, how they're different from therapy or emotional support animals, and what it takes to train and pair a dog with an individual. Joining us, Kara Malach. She's Client Services Manager for NEEDS, an organization that provides service dogs for people with disabilities. Hi, Kara.
Hi, Mindy. Thank you for having me this morning.
Sure. Amy Bauer, Senior Scientist and Physical Oceanographer at HUI. She's used service dogs for 20 years to assist her as she has lost most of her vision due to retinal degeneration. Her current dog is Intrepid, an 8-year-old black Labrador trained by the Seeing Eye in New Jersey. Amy's with us, and so is Intrepid. Hi, Amy. Good to see you again.
Thank you, and hi from Intrepid.
Lynn Stoss is Region Coordinator for Guiding Eyes for the Blind Eastern Massachusetts. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
And Zalotti is a puppy raiser for Guiding Eyes for the Blind. Hi, Doe.
Hi, nice to be here.
Okay, so we hear the terms service dog, therapy dog, emotional support dog used interchangeably, but they're very different. Who wants to explain? Kara, maybe this is you. What's the difference?
Sure. So a service dog is a working dog that is trained to perform specific task work for an individual with a disability to help mitigate that disability. So, for example, the dog can open a door, retrieve a dropped item, alert someone to a sound in their environment that they may not be able to hear. Service dogs are allowed all public access under Americans with Disabilities law. Assistance dogs are also working dogs. They're partnered with a professional, such as a teacher, a therapist, a courthouse officer. Assistance dogs only have access to the workplace or other public areas when they're working for their intended purpose. A therapy dog is a household pet that volunteers with its owner to provide comfort to individuals in places like senior centers, schools, hospitals. These dogs must receive permission from the facility every time they enter. So they do not have public access like a service dog would. And then an emotional support dog provides emotional support to a specific person. So that's a pet. Some people will say it helps me with my anxiety, depression, what have you. Emotional support dogs do not have public access under ADA laws. So I think the public access piece is really an important piece where people get confused.
Yeah. I was going to say, Lynn, these differences are really important, and people, they don't always get these differences, right?
Right.
Yeah. So what, Kara, you're talking about some of the different tasks service animals can be trained to do, and there's a whole range, right?
Yes. Yes.
So,
yes.
So when you're training a dog, when you bring a dog in for training, are you thinking of particular services that that dog is going to provide for a particular client?
So we have different tracks, and we always say that we let our dogs tell us who they're going to be when they grow up. We don't tell them. So from a very early age, about 8 weeks old, we're starting to test our dogs, and we're seeing what it is that they like to do. What do they think is fun? Do they think sounds are fun? If they do, that dog is going to go to our service dog for hearing track. So that dog will be trained as a service dog to help someone who's deaf or hard of hearing. If we have a dog, you know, that's young and they love picking things up, right? We try to, you know, we're going to send that dog down the service dog for physical disabilities track. So for folks who need help retrieving objects off the floor, who mobility issues, essentially. Mm-hmm. If we see a really friendly dog, we're probably going to send that dog into our assistance dog program. So that dog might go and work in a school with a teacher. They might work in a courthouse. They might work in a hospital or with a therapist, because those dogs tend to really like to interact with people. So we really kind of let them tell us who they want to be.
All right. When Kara said we let them tell us, I was a lot of giggles in here. And so Doe and Lynn, and Doe, you told me a story before, Doe, you had a dog that was trained one way and ended up doing a different type of service, right?
That's right. Yeah. Our first dog was in training at the kennel in Yorktown Heights and had to be released because of a medical issue. So he was offered to us as his raiser. So he is now our forever dog. And we have now taken him to classes, and he's become certified as a therapy dog.
Yeah. All right, Amy, tell us more about your experience with service dogs, starting when you first entertained the idea that a service dog might be helpful for you given your vision loss.
Yeah, right. I have been losing my vision progressively since my early 20s. And initially, I had some vision, and I found a white mobility cane was the most effective way to get around. But after a while, as my vision got worse and I saw many other dog users, I thought, oh, I think a dog, it's a smoother experience. The cane works for many people, and it's easy care. You just throw the cane in the corner when you get home and you don't have to worry about it. But I found it's sort of the bump and adjust method of mobility, where you bump into something and then adjust. And I didn't like that feeling. Mm-hmm. And a dog can more smoothly navigate you around obstacles. So I decided to start looking into guide dogs about 20 years ago.
Yeah. Was there a big adjustment when you got your first service dog? I imagine it's, you know, big lifestyle change.
It's
with
huge.
Benefits, but challenges at first, right?
It's huge. And I had had pet dogs my entire life, one after another. So having a dog itself, but, you know, having a dog at your side almost all the time and being responsible for its care and its behavior in public, and getting used to trusting the dog to guide you correctly was a huge adjustment, just letting go and putting my trust in the dog.
Intrepid's number five?
Yeah, my fifth dog. Yeah, I had a couple of short-timers who developed dog aggression issues and had to be released before the end of their working life. But Intrepid's going strong. He's 8.5 years old, and he's been with me for 6.5 years.
Wow. Talk about the experience of being paired and trained with your dog.
Yeah, Intrepid is from the Seeing Eye in New Jersey, and because I had had dogs before, I had to go there just for a 2-week refresher course in using a guide dog. Usually for a first-time user, it can be a 4-week program. It used to be that you had to go to these schools and stay there for 4 weeks. They had dorms and everything. Yeah, it was a big commitment. Now there are many, many more options for home training, hybrid training. They recognize more blind people are in the workplace now and can't take 4 weeks off to go for training at a specific site. So I went there for 2 weeks, and the pairing is extremely important. It's so specific to the individual, you know, primarily first, so walking speed. Some people walk faster, some people walk slower. And to have a dog that isn't matched well can be extremely frustrating for both. And also, do you live in a city? Do you live in a rural area? Some dogs are a little shyer than others, and a city will be overwhelming. Other dogs have a huge drive and love the city, and just driving through crowds and loud noises don't bother them. And so
it's like matching personalities.
It is, very much so.
Yeah. So tell us about meeting Intrepid. Was it love at first sight?
Oh my gosh, yes. I was sitting in my dorm room at the Seeing Eye, and the trainer knocked on the door. I knew she was coming and brought Intrepid in. He came up to me, sat down, and put his paw on my knee and looked up at me. And I looked at the trainer like, oh my gosh. I'm almost tearing up here remembering the day. I remember it specifically. He's a very affectionate dog.
Yeah. Lynn, service dogs are bred and trained deliberately. And not just any dog can be a service dog, right? So what kind of behaviors or temperament are you looking for?
We're looking for a dog that is pushy a little bit. They have what we call disobedient intelligence, which means that you might want them to do something, but they're going to say no. And they have a reason for that. There's either a bus coming, or you're stepping off the wrong curb, or you're not doing things like that. So raising them and breeding them, that's what they're bred for. So it's interesting to have them. They're interesting and challenging puppies.
Yeah. Kara, you want to add to that?
Sure. It's really interesting when we're looking at guide dogs versus service dogs for physical disabilities, because we're looking for kind of the opposite. We're looking for a follower. So the guide dogs, they're really, I think, looking for leaders. We're looking for followers. We breed our own Labrador retrievers, black and yellow, and we are looking for dogs that are going to follow the commands of our clients. Yeah. So it's really interesting, the differences.
So the breeds, you're using labs, yellow and black labs, Kara?
Yeah. Correct,
and,
yes.
And Lynn, what breeds are you looking
We're
at?
We're using German Shepherds and mostly Labradors.
Right. So Kara, needs trains dogs, as you're mentioning, for a variety of service jobs. How do you determine which dogs are suited for which roles?
So again, it goes back to, it goes really back to what the dogs think are fun. So whether they think sounds are fun or whether they like picking things up off the ground or whatnot. But as Amy was saying, the matching process for us is extremely important. We really want to match the right dog with the right person at the right time. So we are taking into consideration the person's needs with regard to their disability. We're taking into consideration their lifestyle, their living environment, their working environment, their hobbies, their travel habits. As Amy was saying, do they live in a city? Do they live in a suburb? Do they have a more quiet lifestyle? Do they travel a lot? So we really try to look for dogs that are going to fit that person's lifestyle, because if it's the wrong match, like Amy was saying, it really is going to work in the opposite way and be very, very stressful for everyone.
So describe the breeding program it needs and why it's not feasible to use, say, shelter dogs to train for service.
So we started our breeding program about 4 years ago. Prior to that, we're still in a co-op program, so we work with a lot of the different service dog organizations throughout the country. We chose to breed our own dogs so that we can, what we call, purpose breed them. So we're really looking to breed dogs that have the right temperament for service work, for health, for longevity. Because we want to make sure that we're giving our clients the healthiest dogs that we can give them with the best temperaments. And so the genetics of the process are really important. And there's really quite a bit that goes into it in terms of genetic diversity, what we're trying to breed in and breed out for. So it's really a fascinating process.
Yeah. Is that the same, Lynn?
Yeah. It's the same for us too.
Okay. We are talking about service dogs this morning. If you'd like to ask a question or share your experience with us, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about service dogs this morning, how they're different from therapy or emotional support animals, and what it takes to train and pair a dog with an individual. With us is Kara Malachi's Client Services Manager for NEEDS, an organization that provides service dogs for people with disabilities. Amy Bauer, Senior Scientist and Physical Oceanographer at HUI. She's used service dogs for 20 years to assist her as she's lost most of her vision. Lynn Stoss is Region Coordinator for Guiding Eyes for the Blind in Eastern Massachusetts. And Do Zalati is a puppy raiser for Guiding Eyes for the Blind. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Perhaps somebody out there is thinking, puppy raiser? Maybe I could do that like Doe and Lynn. So, Lynn, talk first about the first months and years before these dogs are in their role when they're the puppy raisers. When do you get the puppy and how long do you have it?
So you usually get the puppy when they're about 4 months old. Sometimes 10 weeks to 12 weeks is our window. And they're placed with you after you've gone through a series of training. We have modules online. We have a online course that we run so that you know what you're getting into before you get there. And once they're placed with you, we have classes twice a month. They're in Needham on Newton on Saturdays. And you'll come to a class that's designed for the age that your dog is at. And before that, when you first get them, we give you crates, we give you bowls, we give you backpacks, all kinds of things to get you started, appropriate toys, leashes. There's a number of things. Mm-hmm. It's like a goodie bag when you get the puppy. You're responsible to taking them to the vet on a schedule to get their vaccines. And once that's completed, you're reimbursed for all the vaccines and the office visits. And after that, you're ready to go. So you start with 8 weeks of the STEP program that we have with foundation classes. So you learn sit, down, over, stand. There's a bunch of commands that mm-hmm. we use. How to walk nicely on a leash, which I'm still working with Destiny because she's a little bit of a firecracker. And you just, each lesson that you do helps you gain more confidence, helps the dog gain more confidence. And then you start going out in public. About 4-5 months, they earn, 4 to 5 months, they earn their jacket. And then they're able to go out in public. They have the same access that a guide, trained guide dog has. So you can go into coffee shops and.
Does it say guide dog in training?
It does.
In training. I was saying, I thought I had seen that before.
Okay. It does.
Yeah. Doe, how long have you been a service dog puppy raiser, and why was this something you wanted to do?
Well, I got my first dog, Louie, in June of 2021. And I had retired, and I just felt that I needed to do something meaningful in my life. I'd served on boards, I'd volunteered at kids' schools, I've done lots mm-hmm. of things, but I've always had a dog, and I decided this is something I could do that would hopefully make a big difference in someone's life. Mm-hmm. So that's why I decided to do that.
Yeah, and it's one of the things I asked you before we went on the air is it hard to let these dogs go? And you said yes, but it's because of what it's going to mean in somebody's life.
That's right. Yeah. I think, you know, when you get a puppy, I think especially your first puppy, it's a new experience, but you tell yourself, this is not my dog, mm-hmm. and I will train this dog and love this dog and do whatever I can for it, but hopefully it is going to go on to change someone's life.
So, Doe, talk a little bit about the role and responsibilities of a puppy raiser. You mentioned you're giving it love, you're giving it basic obedience. Is it more involved than that?
One of the big things is house manners. We hear about house manners a lot.
Yes,
and, you know, it's our job to make sure that dogs do not get up on furniture, they don't beg at the table, they place when you tell them, they learn to go to a mat and they're supposed to settle there. We also try to teach them the basics, as Lynn mentioned, the basic commands, walking without pulling, socializing with other dogs, and taking them to as many places as we can so they are exposed to the larger world.
Logan asks, what is the daily time commitment for the training?
So the time commitment is basically whenever you're up with the dog. But it's in sections. It's like at the moment, Destiny's in a crate at home with my husband because I'm not there. If I have to go do something, then I'll use my crate and put her in and I'll go do something else. But the time commitment is you have to kind of go through a daily life plan and say, okay, what do I do each day? Do I have time to take it out? Do I have time to go do an outing? We do outings when they get older at least 5 to 6 times a week so that they get exposed to all kinds of things. So if you're going to the library, you're going to take them to the library, return your books. Mm-hmm. You know, just simple everyday things. You're going to the grocery store when they get older, you're going to take them to shop with you.
Yeah.
So it's just basically kind of integrating them into your life so that when they go on to be a service dog for someone else, that they've already learned all those things.
Yeah. So, Doe, are you thinking that when you're taking a puppy out, are you thinking about the person that the dog's going to go to and what things they might be doing during the day? What's going through your mind when you're bringing this puppy around?
No, because I have no idea who that person will be matched up with. So it's my job to really try to expose them to as many things as I can. Mm. Grandchildren, children, mm-hmm. older people, we bring the puppies down a lot to the ferry terminal so that they're getting used to the bus sounds and the mm-hmm. ferry whistles and other dogs and people and traffic. And so that's a great place to bring them for socialization.
Kara, I imagine your program is very similar.
It is similar. I think our puppy raisers are the heart and soul of this organization. The mm-hmm. amount of time and work they put in. I'm a puppy sitter for needs. Right now, I actually have a 14-week-old puppy sleeping on the floor behind me. And it's hard work. It's a lot of fun, but you know, as the raisers can attest, it's a lot of work, but it's so rewarding in the end when our raisers are able to meet the clients that the dogs are matched with. And just to hear how these dogs really truly change people's lives, give them their independence, and kind of reconnect them, you know, to the world. It is worth it. It is totally worth it. So we have, you know, we are in, I'll just give a shameless plug. we were in desperate need of puppy razors. The little girl I have here with me, we need a razor for her. So we need folks on the Cape. If anyone's listening, they can go to our website, needs.org. We do individual razors. We also do team raising, which is kind of a cool concept. So you could raise a puppy with your best friend or your neighbor, and you share the responsibilities, because, you know, it is a lot of responsibility, especially when they're young. Yeah. So it's a really cool way to volunteer.
I say, and Lynn, Kara's not the only one who needs puppy raisers.
No,
so do you.
We do too. And I agree with her. I mean, I've started puppies. That's what I was doing. I've done 13 in a row recently, just because we needed them to get started, get a little bit of a boost, and then hand them off to a raiser that couldn't go out in the middle of the night with them at first. So we desperately do need puppy raisers. So I do agree with Kara.
I know we sort of touched on this, but Amy, where can a service animal go, and how often have you had people question you bringing Intrepid with you?
Service animals that are trained to provide a specific service can go anywhere that the public can go.
Any public space.
Any public space, yes. And and of course, many private spaces, too, as long as it checks out, you know. But pretty much absolutely everywhere. And I have been questioned, I'd say 20 years ago, I would often get questioned by restaurant owners or managers. Not so much anymore. I think the education has improved on the fact that service dogs are allowed in restaurants, for example. The bigger challenge now is rideshare drivers who are not necessarily well acquainted with the ADA and also the regulations of Lyft and Uber, who they guide service animals are absolutely allowed in Uber and Lyft vehicles. And that's where I get the most trouble these days.
Yeah. We see dogs in restaurants, grocery stores quite frequently. Often it's not clear if the dog is a service dog. Kara, how do business owners know if a service animal is really a service animal and not just a pet?
It's extremely challenging to know. And, you know, business owners want to be within, they want to be following the law. They do not want to fine. So within a business owner's rights, legally, they can ask two questions. Is that a service animal? And what tasks does that dog perform? Those are the two questions. They cannot ask about a person's disability. So we actually do a lot of advocacy work with business owners. We just have a new partnership with Tanglewood because Tanglewood called us and said, Tanglewood's turning into a dog park. We need help. we don't know what our rights are. Can you help us? So we've done a lot of work educating their staff about the law. Dogs that can come in, what you can ask. And also, more importantly, I think once a dog is in a public space, if the dog is exhibiting behaviors that are not in line with the service dog, they're barking, they're lunging, they're aggressive, business owners are well within their rights to ask those people to leave. So it's very confusing, and we really do try to do a lot of advocacy work. We have what we call the red vest program. Our dogs wear red vests, red capes. So we try to work with business owners to educate them, and they're able to display a red vest certified business decal in their window, basically just indicating to folks with legitimate service dogs, hey, we know the laws, you know, come on in, basically. So it's just really, really challenging. And it's kind of like the Wild West. The regulations right now, there's not a lot of them. We're trying to get legislation passed with Mass State Legislature. We've had a bill on Beacon Hill for 7 years. We're still trying to get it passed to have people who are presenting dogs as, you know, that are fake service dogs, to be fined and have to do some community service in the disability community. So,
yeah, you mentioned fake service dogs, and anybody can go online and get like these fake certificates, right? That just say and that have had absolutely no training.
Yeah, and the vests. Yeah, they can get the equipment. Yeah. So it's a huge problem.
And how prevalent is that? I would imagine that creates a lot of problems for the actual trained service dogs.
Yes.
Huge problems.
Yeah.
Huge problems.
It's very frustrating, and I feel like I get challenged more because of the fake ones, mm-hmm. you know, because I understand it puts business owners in a tough spot, and so they end up challenging everybody. So it makes my life more difficult as a legitimate service dog user.
Yeah. Kara, what about you have the dogs that are trained and they've gone through a rigorous training program to be service dogs. And they're in these environments with dogs, as you mentioned, that might be unruly. They might be reactive to other dogs. Have you had instances where that's created problems for the folks with the service dogs?
Unfortunately, we have had incidents. We've had several dogs attacked, injured. We really do a lot of training. So our clients come to our campus for training. It's a facility-based model. And during their training, we do a lot of work on how to sort of spot a fake service dog. So, Home Depot, Lowe's, people bring their dogs in there all the time. And just to really get a sense, if you see someone coming with a service dog that you don't think is legitimate, it's barking, it's lunging, it's aggressive, you just kind of have to get out of the way, right? You don't want to challenge that person. You don't want to put your dog in jeopardy. But it's a huge problem for folks mm-hmm. who have legitimate service dogs that are truly meeting these dogs, in public, in their daily lives.
Yeah. In Europe, it's very hard to fake an assistance dog because they have to go through a specific training program and they carry their paperwork. What's anybody's thoughts on a mandatory certification for service dogs in the U.S.? Is that something you think we need or should have? Anybody?
Well, there's a privacy issue here that's built in to the ADA, too, where it's unlawful to ask somebody about their disability mm-hmm. as a means of gaining access to a public space. And that includes turning over some kind of certification or ID card or whatever for your service animal. So I get that. It's a difficult question.
What about just people, well-meaning people, Amy, I'm sure you get this, who want to come and pet Intrepid. And I see Intrepid has a sign, ignore me, I'm working, right?
Right. Yes. Thank you for asking that question, because this is maybe my second biggest problem after Uber and Lyft drivers are refusing service, is people coming up and petting the dog without asking. That is a huge no-no. Yeah. If you want to ask, if you want to pet the dog, you have to ask first. And it's best, really, I think, not to. And the preferred interaction is basically to ignore the mm-hmm. service dog. Because as soon as you start paying a lot of attention, dogs are dogs. Mm-hmm. Most of them love people, and they will react to that third person who's reaching out to them or talking to them or making eye contact. And that breaks their work. That breaks them off their task. And so it's really important guide dog etiquette to try to ignore the dog completely. If you can't, ask the handler if you can interact with the dog at all.
And Del and Lynn, I'm sure you run into this all the time as well, right?
Yeah, we do. But as puppy raisers, we have a different method. We teach the dog to say hi on our command mm-hmm. so that they get over that.
Oh, interesting.
Interest, that they want to play with every single person that walks by. We say, we can say hi, you can pet them on their back, and then we say, let's go, and we move. Mm. So if they've had that enough when they're little, by the time they get older and they get into training, they're kind of like, oh, yeah, people.
Been there, done that.
Don't need to go visit those people.
Service dogs are expensive because it takes a lot of time to mm-hmm. raise them to be good at their jobs. Lynn, at what age, you think you touched on this, does a puppy leave the raiser and then return for training elsewhere?
They go back between 14 and 20 months old right now. It shifts depending on how many dogs we need. I just got a notice the other day that we're going to pull some a little bit early in my region because of the fact that they have some more demands right at the moment.
But And I would imagine some dogs learn quicker than others, right?
Yeah. But they have a set plan. They bring in their breeding group first, potentials, and then they'll bring in. They did a lot yesterday. We had an IFT yesterday, and there was a lot of breeding evals bringing dogs in for breeding consideration, and then regular training dogs too. Yeah.
All right, Kara. Same thing, right? About the same for you.
Right around the same. When our dogs are about 18 months old and they're out with puppy raisers, they come back to campus. We call it going to college. So they come back to our campus and they finish up their final training. So that's just some of the more advanced task work that they do on campus here with our in-house staff.
All right. So advanced training. How many dogs actually complete that advanced training?
We have between about 50% of them.
50%?
But they can also go to other careers, too.
Right.
And Needs actually has some of our dogs that aren't really trained. They don't really want to do guide dog work, but they are more task-oriented. So we do share.
Yeah.
And they'll go into a program like that. Or Connecticut State Police. Or there's a lot of MSA buys a lot of our dogs and trains them. So they're given other options. Some of them are better suited for other careers.
Right. And Kara, what about for you? How about what's the percentage of dogs that graduate college?
we're right around a 50% success rate as well. We really try to make sure that the dogs we're putting out are exactly on their task work, so that there's no issues when they're matched.
And then what happens to the pups that aren't cut out for service work?
Our pups that aren't cut out for service work go and live the pet life. We have we call our adoption program the furloughed favorites. So we put them up for adoption. People apply just like they would for a service dog. They apply to adopt.
Well, you're getting a trained dog. I mean, when you think about that, right? Those are dogs
you are getting. I have two myself. They're 10 and 11. Furlough favorites. And it was funny when I first adopted them, I did not work at Needs. And they said to me, you know, Ajax is my 11-year-old guy. They said, he barks. I said, what do you mean he barks? He's a dog, you know? And they said, can't bark. So I wound up with this dog that knew 40 commands, could open the fridge, get me some water, shut the lights off. I mean, it was wild, you know? So these dogs are beautiful dogs, that we adopt out.
We're talking about service dogs this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about service dogs this morning, how they're different from therapy or emotional support animals, and what it takes to train and pair a dog with an individual. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Got an email from Carrie in Barnesville who says, when my boys were 6 and 8 years old, we applied to be puppy raisers for the Canine Companions for Independence program, a program that provides dogs for people with disabilities. Other than sight impairment. It was a wonderful and enlightening experience for our family. We were entrusted to train a sweet black lab retriever puppy with the understanding that our pup would go on to help someone. It was heartbreaking when we dropped Lolly off for her advanced training at their training facilities down in Long Island, but we also had a strong sense of accomplishment as a family. Unfortunately, Lolly had a very high food drive, which they determined could not be trained out for her, so she was released from the program after 2 weeks. We were full of joy and some bittersweetness when we traveled back to Long Island to pick her up. Lolly lived to 15 and was an integral, special, and deeply loved member of our family. She also became part of the companion animal program here on the Cape and for many years visited Harbor Point Memory Care Facility in Centerville to the delight of many residents. It was truly unique, satisfying, and life-changing experience for all of us. All right, there you go. Hopefully you're going to get some people going, okay, sign me up. How do I raise puppies? Denise is giving us a call from Woods Hole. Hi, Denise.
Oh, good morning. This is such an interesting program. Thank you for having this on.
You bet.
Yeah. So we were wondering how long this dog stay in service and what happens to them after they're retired.
good question, Denise. What happens? I know, Amy, you kept a couple of them, right?
Yeah, exactly. The service life of the dog does depend on their physiology and the rigor of their work life. Some dogs that are going to drive through cities, I don't mean drive a car, drive themselves and their handler through cities, you know, with a lot of walking. I mean, just like humans, their joints wear out. And so some of their work longevity will depend on what kind of work they're doing. But when they are ready to retire, there are multiple options. Some people choose to keep their retired dog as they bring on a new service dog. If they have a big enough house and enough space and enough time to care for two dogs, that's common. Some dogs will be released back to the school or program that they came from, and that organization will find new homes for these retired dogs, mm-hmm. who are also very well trained and ready for a retired life and usually make great pets.
Yeah. Amy, one thing we didn't talk about is cost. There's a lot of money invested in these animals. We're talking mm-hmm. about the breeding and the training, and they can be up, what,
$50,000? $50,000 to $60,000 exactly. Each dog. Yeah.
And the folks who get these service dogs don't pay for that.
Typically correct. Yeah. They don't pay hardly anything. And the whole enterprise is supported by philanthropy, as far as I know.
Yeah. Yes. Kara, you got that same for you, right?
So on average, it costs needs per dog about $50,000 to breed, raise, train, and match the dog. For civilian clients, so non-military clients, we require the clients to fundraise $8,000, which is a donation to needs. Mm-hmm. We have a service dogs for veterans program. So veterans with any type of disability, it doesn't matter. The veterans, when they apply to the program and they're matched with the dog, there is no cost to a veteran. So that's a specific program within needs.
Yeah. So each program is a little different, Lynn, then?
Yes. Yeah. We ours are about 50,000 when they're done, like Kara said, from puppy to finish, but we don't ask anything for them. They're given to our clients along with all of their equipment and discounts on medication, heartworm and flea and protection.
How are you funded? How do you pay for this?
It's all donations.
Wow.
We have corporations. We have individuals. We have people that sign their estate over to us. Mm-hmm. So all that money goes directly back into the training and the raising and the breeding.
Right. Let's talk to Janet giving us a call from Martha's Vineyard. Hi, Janet. Janet, are you there? All right. Call back, Janet. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, Janet from Martha's Vineyard. Hi, Janet. Nope, we don't have Janet. Okay. All right, Kara, talk a little bit about how you train an animal to, say, alert someone with diabetes that their blood sugar is getting low, or alert someone that a seizure is forthcoming. How do you train that?
Mm-hmm. So needs, we do not train medical alert service dogs. So those dogs, the diabetes, seizures, those are very specific. Needs does not do that. My understanding is that it is all scent work. So if someone is pre-seizure, blood sugar's low, your body gives off a certain scent that humans cannot detect. Mm-hmm. And dogs can. So that is my understanding of how those dogs are trained. And there are many service dog organizations that do train those type of dogs.
Yeah, that's fascinating, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
According to some disability organizations, only 1 in 4 people with a disability have a service dog. What are the barriers for people getting service dogs?
Well,
go ahead, Amy.
Where they live, they may feel, people who live in big apartment buildings in a city area may feel that a dog in their life is going to be a burden, and not work for them. There are also, speaking for blind and low vision folks more, some choose to stick with the mobility cane. It is a no fuss, no muss mobility technique, and some people just prefer that to having a dog. Some people aren't dog people,
right?
Yeah. It just depends on personal preference to some extent, but also where you live and your lifestyle.
Yeah. Do you have enough dogs to go around for the requests that you have?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
We're constantly breeding. We're constantly training. They have a large training facility, so there are a lot of candidates. And each person that's matched, there's one or two that are picked to be sure that we get the right match. So they've watched you training with people on campus. They have different things that they ask you and your pace, and they'll match dogs up. So they have a pool of dogs they can pick from so that they find the exact match. And it might be a day or two in and you say, oh, this guy walks way too fast for me, or he's way too slow. Yeah. Okay, so let's try somebody else.
Got it.
So
all right.
Helps.
Now, Janet from Martha's Vineyard. Hi, Janet.
Hi.
Hi. We gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the phone, but anyway, I just recently met someone at the hospital that works here, and he's having his dog trained. He has seizures, and the dog is to alert him to when this is going to happen. How do they do that?
Yeah, I think we just sort of touched on that. It's just something the dogs have a sense for. Anybody have thoughts on that? I know none of you here do that kind of training, but is that like the low blood sugar care, as far as you know? It's something they just sense?
My understanding is that that the human body emits a scent when, you know, prior to a seizure, and that the dog is able to pick up on that scent, and they're trained to do that. It's really fascinating.
Yes.
These dogs are amazing what they can do.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, just you think about what goes on in those dogs' brains. They can smell so much better than we can. And they, you know, their senses are just so amazing.
When you're raising them, you're thinking that too, because you'll ask them to do something and they look at you and think about it for a minute, and you're like, oh, okay, we're going to have to rearrange that.
Well, and you also wonder what signals you're giving them that you're not even aware that you're doing. You know, I had a German Shepherd once when I lived on a lake, and we had a little canoe, we had a little sailboat, and a powerboat. And that dog would run down to the dock and jump in the right boat every single time. I was like, how does he know? So it had to be something that we did in our movements that alerted the dog, like you picked up the keys or something instead of an oar. I don't know. But Janet, thank you for the call. How much support, if any, do people with service dogs need once they've had a successful pairing with the dog? What happens after? I imagine, Amy, maybe you can speak to this. When you first get the dog, especially that first one, you're like, okay, what now?
Yeah. Most of the programs provide excellent support after placement because they recognize, especially for the first dog, that it's a very big change sometimes in lifestyle, depending. Mm-hmm. And again, that piece about putting your trust in the dog is a big step for many people. And so they may come, you know, and visit 2 weeks after you've brought the dog home, and then again a month later and 6 weeks later as the dog gets settled into its new life in your home and your workplace and your community. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's an essential part. I've had both positive and negative follow-up experiences, it has made all the difference in whether the placement sticks or not.
Yeah. Same thing. And do you have contact with the folks after that? Not just initially. I mean, imagine people come and go, hey, this dog is fabulous. Saved my life. You know,
we do have some contact, and it's up to the client, not us. Mm-hmm. We fill out a questionnaire when we send the puppy back in. We're invited to graduation. If the puppy graduates, we can go watch the infra training test that they did Tuesday. So you're involved. You get postcards from the puppies when they're in the kennel saying college is great. They got good snacks. There's toys that come from the ceiling. You know, you get all these interesting facts that they send you. But once they graduate, you're invited to go to graduation to meet the graduate if they're there. Some are home trained, so they're not. Mm-hmm. I've had both. You can keep in contact with them if it's their wish to do that. Yeah. I just had one graduate that I started, And he was so excited. He got home from graduation and called me. It scared me. It was this weird number from New York. And he said, "Hi, I have your dog." And I said, "Oh." It took me a minute to figure out because there's a string of them.
Yeah.
Because I had 13 starters. Yeah. So they're in various stages of graduation or training. So,
yeah.
But he was very enthusiastic, wanted to keep in touch. And he loved, you know, talking with me and finding out what he was like the first 6 months I had him. And
I think we'd want to know the history, right? Carrie, you have the same experience?
Some of our clients build wonderful lifelong friendships with their puppy raisers. It's just so nice to see. They'll go to lunch, they'll visit, holidays, and you know, sometimes even the occasional dog sitting when needed. So it's really, it's just so wonderful when that happens. It's a really cool relationship.
All right. Not everyone works out that well, right? Sometimes you might have a pairing that doesn't work. So Kara, what happens then?
Sometimes, very, very rarely do we have a pairing that doesn't work out. What we try to do in many cases is have the folks come back to campus kind of like for a tune-up, or we'll send a trainer out just to kind of troubleshoot and see what the issues are. In most cases, we're able to solve the issue and, you know, the match is successful. In very rare cases, when it really is just not going to work out, we always will take the dog back, reevaluate. Maybe we can match that dog with another client that it's better suited to. Maybe not, depending on what the issue is, but that's a very, very rare case because of the legwork up front that goes into the matching and the training.
Lynn, is that the same for you?
It's the same for us too. Yeah. And we have trainers everywhere. So once you get matched with your guide dog, they're checking in with you all the time. You can call the school at any time. If you have a vet issue, you can call the vets anytime and say, "Oh, this happened. And I don't know, my vet's saying this and I don't know." It's the same thing with training. We had a client that I had talked to a few times, had one of our dogs from Eastern Mass, and she tells how she was in a 5-point intersection they built. It wasn't there when she first started training. She went to go to CVS and thought, "Oh my God, I have no idea how to get through this." So the trainer went down to Florida and walked her through it for a week, and she said, "I got it." And when he left, he said, "All right, you got to do it on your own." She did it, and he said, "Okay, you guys are good to go." So there's a lot of support there.
Amy, you've had that experience.
Well, sometimes the client isn't quite ready either and may not realize that. And that was my story, actually. The first dog I received, I was losing my vision slowly, and I wasn't sure when is the right time exactly. So I thought, well, I think I'm ready, you know. But I, taking on the dog was a huge responsibility, a huge adjustment, a good one in the end. But at that time, my vision, it turned out, was just a little bit better. And in the balance, I thought, I'm not quite ready for a dog after all. You know, I'm going to rely on my remaining vision for now. And I gave the dog back, and it was placed immediately with another client.
Certainly a lot of training goes into these dogs.
And
as we mentioned, everybody's looking for puppy raisers. So what makes someone a good puppy raiser? Doe?
I think a love for dogs. I think you also have to understand that you get so much more back than what you give. The dog teaches you patience. It gives you unconditional love. And I think the support that you get from Guiding Eyes to help you train and teach these dogs, and the friendships with those folks, is just unconditional.
And if folks are thinking about that, we're going to have links to Needs and Guiding Eyes for the Blind at our website, capeandislands.org. Doesn't hurt to reach out and, you know, check it out. Kara Millett is the Client Services Manager for Needs. Amy Bauer, Senior Scientist and Physical Oceanographer at HUI, who's used service dogs for 20 years, brought Intrepid along with her, who has not made a peep all hour. Lynn Stas, Region Coordinator for Guiding Eyes for the Blind, Eastern Massachusetts, and Doe Salato, who is the puppy raiser for Guiding Eyes for the Blind. Thank you all so much for being here and helping us understand better what the dogs do and the laws around them. Thanks.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening. Mindy.
Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.